presented by B Matters, with host Jacqueline Peterson and Dr. Haley Estrom.
Feeding does matter.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Feeding Does Matter. My name is Jacqueline Peterson. I'm CEO of Feeding Matters.
Hi, and I'm Haley Estrom. I am an associate professor in the School of Nursing at UNC Wilmington. How are you doing today, Jacqueline?
I am feeling pretty good today. How are you doing?
No, I'm not too bad. I am in air conditioning.
Oh, yeah. You guys are going through that heat wave right now.
It is warm and it is not a dry heat.
No, that's what I always like. I mean, here in Arizona, we're used to like the 110s and stuff, but it is like opening your oven and it's a dry heat. But humidity plus the really, really, really hot, not fun. So I'm sorry. Please make sure you're drinking water, though. It's a real concern.
I have 3 beverages next to me.
Perfect. Well, then we will get into our guest today, who's got a beautiful background as we're interviewing her, even though this is audio and you can't see it, listeners, but it is very beautiful. So we are talking to the chair of our physician outreach project, who's going to be sharing a little bit about the project and some of the ways that this movement is happening at the grassroots level. So welcome to Dr. Lily Glasgow, who is a feeding therapist and an occupational therapist. So, Lily, excited to have you.
Yay! Thank you so much for having me. Haley, I just moved from Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and that's where I did my PhD, and it was
a
very humid heat for a long time. But now in Portland, Oregon, it's like 65.
Yeah, I was like, you don't look like you're hot at all over there.
No. And I am 8 months pregnant and not sweating. So I think this is a good spot to be.
Good spot for you, for sure.
Right. Mm-hmm. Good spot right now. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for having me.
Yes. Excited to get into it. How did you find your way into the feeding world? We always think it's so interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. So I graduated with my master's of OT from the Medical University of South Carolina in 2018. And I moved to Oregon that same year for a pediatric fellowship, one of the like AOTA fellowships. And I had a feeding intensive as my first kind of rotation at the Oregon Health and Science University. It was phenomenal. I fell in love with feeding pretty immediately. And I had clinical experience in the NICU during my schooling and during my field works. And the feeding clinic, I was just so interested in the more long-term effects of NICU stays and early feeding challenges that the clinic spot, the diagnostics and the treatments we were doing was fascinating to me. So when I finished the fellowship year, I ended up taking a position in the school district, in the local school district, doing feeding services. So I was the OT that worked on the school feeding team for the county. And I really, really liked that. That area is fascinating. School feeding kind of got my heart for safety and for teacher training and paraprofessional training, and really just making sure school was comfortable and safe for all these kids with PFD. It's a very dynamic setting, and I really liked it. And then I was doing outpatient feeding at the same time. So I went back and did my PhD at UNC Chapel Hill and really focused on school feeding and specifically school feeding policies. So I was very interested in state and federal level policies that gave us any sort of rationale for why feeding was so important for education, and found that really doesn't exist much. There is almost nothing that is published or written about how important the therapist's role and the teacher's role and the parent's role is in maintaining safety for school. So, yeah, that brought me into my dissertation. I did a school-based critical discourse analysis of school lunches. And then I took an assistant professor position here in Oregon at Pacific University, where I teach pediatrics, and have been continuing on with some PFD-specific research through this last year. So it's been fabulous. And I got involved with Feeding Matters really early. I would say the clinic that my first position during my fellowship, we recommended Feeding Matters to everyone who came through that clinic. So parents, caregivers, kind of anyone in the community, we were really always talking about Feeding Matters. And then when I was doing my PhD, a good friend of mine has done research with Feeding Matters, Kelsey Thompson. And so she had asked if I wanted to be involved in this new project. And so I was like, absolutely. I would love to be part of any sort of research engagement with Feeding Matters. And so started volunteering for them fairly early on with the PhD journey. And it's been really fascinating to see how this has unfolded over the past couple of years. I did not know how this was going to go, especially really new in the kind of research realm. And it's grown into a full-fledged project.
Well, that's interesting, you know, because Dr. Kelsey Thompson is a PhD SLP and you're a PhD OT. How would you say that the OT world approaches feeding differently, or do they, from an SLP?
Absolutely. I think they are such collaborative partners in the feeding world. In OT, and my PhD is in occupational science, which is even a more niche, small area. It's really the theory of occupation and what is human occupation, and what are all the things that it entails. So I was really curious about this occupation of meals and this occupation of eating. And the SLP, I think, really offers a strong view and understanding of the mechanisms of feeding. And I don't mean to downplay that. I think that's like actually extraordinarily important, while the OT offers this much more holistic view of the sensory processes and the environment and the culture that come into feeding. And I think you really have to have both. So I have always worked alongside SLPs directly in collaboration with feeding. And I don't like to do any feeding things solo. And I think that the same goes for a lot of my SLP friends. We work better as a pair. One of the things that I've done a lot of research on is the like ableism, the healthism, and the other like large scale systematic impacts of feeding. And not so much the individual level treatment strategies. And I think that perspective allows me to confidently talk to parents that are going through a lot of judgment on what their kids will eat, or a lot of fear about doctors telling them that their kids are at weights that they don't like, or are these different kind of things. And I've been able to have this perspective of, but is this the occupation? How is the occupation being engaged in? How is the participation looking? And are these coming from real nutritional deficiencies, or is this coming from a very, ableist lens of what like food and what eating? Yeah, a judgment place. So I think that's the kind of beauty of OT, is sometimes we can think in this much wider understanding of occupation embedded in environment that gives us some flexibility.
Definitely. Oh man, Lily, you gave me so many things to think about that I almost want to ask you so many more questions. Something else. Yeah. Like a typical like occupational therapist, kind of really what is the expansive ways in which we could go about this, and there's many, and so we will have you back because I think there's a few things that I, like, thought about that I want to want to pick your brain on. But today we brought you because we want to talk about the Physician Outreach Project, which you are chair of. So maybe share a little bit about that particular committee, both like the history and kind of like how it's evolved and where it's at today.
Yeah, absolutely. This project has been so cool. I have engaged in my research career in a lot of different types of research projects, and this is by far my favorite. And I have told the committee a million times that the way that everyone's voices on the committee are really heard and impact the way that we do things is very special and very unique. And I think it's a different culture in Feeding Matters than a lot of the more academic spaces that I dabble in. So I got involved back years ago when it was this digital outreach project. And that project was bringing together people from different disciplines that were interested in creating information modules, videos, really, for physicians to understand the different aspects of PFD, with the kind of goal of if we increase physician understanding, we will increase early identification and early referrals. That was a big priority for all of us on the team, was to make this really accessible, these short form videos that physicians could just plant the little seed of PFD in their mind. And expand the idea from we're just looking at growth charts and we're just looking at ounces of formula, and really change into how is the mealtime experience. That project has evolved. We partnered with CHOA, Children's Healthcare of Atlanta, fairly early on, because they also had a similar mission and they had some grant funding to create these videos. The process of creating these, the actual, we're calling them modules, they're videos, was so interesting to me because they were so professional. So we hired on a like a animation studio to make these videos, and the writing and the rewriting of scripts for these videos was, again, the committee led this. The committee wrote these scripts and edited them and re-edited them and rewrote them.
There's lots of rewriting.
Yes, to be short and succinct.
And iterate on it, yeah.
It was really fascinating. You know, I think...
The Feeding Matters POP committee.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. So we all had a pretty significant role in those writing, editing. If we only have this many words and we only have this many minutes, how can we make this as helpful and not overwhelming as possible? So those videos turned out so much better than I think any of us anticipated. They're beautiful. They're very short. They're like 3 minutes each. And they really enforce this idea of collaborating with local therapists and really listening to parents. I think that has been... a strong message that's gotten through with these series of videos.
Yeah. And you all did a good job of, I'm going to use the word fight for that. It wasn't like you had to like fight for it, but it was just like, it's not always top of mind when you're trying to think about, we need to talk about this, we need to talk about this. And so I thought the committee did such a great job of really living out the values and making sure this is going to be a family-centered project.
Absolutely.
And you did that a lot, because I remember that, like, that video in particular took a lot of rewriting.
Yep. A lot of negotiation. And I think the team, we all felt very strongly that the parent perspective and the child perspective needed to be at the forefront. And I think in, you know, I'm in academia, and the medical profession, we don't get that first person account. That's not how training and schooling goes. And we really wanted to shift that. And we really wanted this to be the place that physicians could watch these very short form videos and get a glimpse of why they need to be thinking about PFD and why they need to be screening for PFD. So the experience was it changed the way that I think about providing information to both my students and the larger kind of medical community. So yeah, we worked on that for a while. And now we're in this really unique phase of the project of recruiting physicians across the country to take a pre-test survey. There's a pre-knowledge survey, a demographic survey about who they are, where they practice. Do they talk to their people about feeding? And then watch these videos and then take a post-knowledge test. That is ongoing. We want everyone to send this study to any physician in their life, any pediatrician in their life, NPs, DOs, anyone who works in this field that has access, that are these referring physicians, so that they can take the pretest, understand some new information, get some little tidbits, and then take the post-test. And we want to see how effective these videos are. We want to see our reach with these videos. And we really want to, again, just plant the seed in a small but important way that the family experience matters so much with feeding.
Yeah. Can you walk us through the six modules and tell us a bit about what's the arc of them? You know, like, what do you really want pediatricians to come away with after they go through the six short form?
Absolutely. So the six modules correspond directly to the areas of PFD. Mm-hmm. So it's like nutrition, psychosocial, family experience. What are the other ones?
Yeah, feeding skill.
There, yeah.
So they map on a little bit about PFD is like the first one, like an intro to PFD, and then it's the four domains, and then the family experience.
There you go. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So they're lovely. They get watched in order. Each one follows a similar flow where it introduces the topic. It gives some real world ideas about what you could ask a family to solicit that kind of information, what a family might say that would give you a little hint that there might be a need to ask further questions. And then they all lead to resources and action items as far as using the information that's on Feeding Matters website, using the screening tools, and referring to providers. So they all kind of have this direct message. So it's being discussed six times as far as following up. Yeah. They're short, they're sweet, they're simple. They're also, there's this overarching kind of pattern with them, but they're distinct enough that I really like the way that you can, they don't feel very redundant, in my opinion. They are distinct areas of PFD throughout.
Yeah. And to go back on that, so Feeding Matters ended up collaborating with CHOA on this, or Children's Healthcare of Atlanta. How did they end up finding each other, or how did that come about?
Yeah, my understanding was that CHOA also had a project funded for this very reason. And their focus was CHOA employees and people in their network to do physician education. Feeding Matters has had a long history and relationship with some of those authors and some of those researchers. And so Feeding Matters was able to collaborate right in, have an IRB.
Yeah, we're like, you're doing that? We're doing that.
We're doing that. And just expand our reach. So in the IRB and in the process, there have to be a certain number of people that are in that CHOA network. And then we are doing the exact same project, but wider across the country. So it's the same project. Happens to be, again, this is a totally relational situation of like, wait, you're doing this?
So we're not like recreating the wheel or especially in like such a limited space. It was a helpful timing to kind of figure that out at the same time while we were both starting.
Beautiful.
Very beautiful. Yeah.
It's been quite collaborative.
Yes. And there's you all are in like the recruitment phase right now because it's a high number that you're trying to get. 750 is what I think I'm remembering.
650.
Oh, okay. Yep. Well, at least it's lower than 750.
I know, 750.
But yeah, I know you're trying to get a lot. And so we will have we'll have Kristen on to tell us a little bit about how the specifics of the project are going and if she's seeing anything come through, because I know there has been some numbers come through.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You all are doing so much on the grassroots recruitment, those sorts of things. Maybe share with us a little bit about how POP is approaching that for recruitment. And then I will say, if you're interested in these modules, they are in the research project right now, but they will be public once we're done with this. And we are trying to figure out what that dissemination and implementation plan looks like.
Absolutely. This recruitment has been very grassroots. We have taken so many words of advice from community members, OTs, speech therapists, PTs, even people in more hospital-based settings, parents, about how to reach the physicians. We've been, as a committee, meeting with the Feeding Matters community councils to get the word out. And the community councils have been able to kind of run with this. So some of the community councils have been able to set up lunch and learns or brown bags, some sort of in-services for their local groups of physicians to all take the knowledge test, the pretest on their phones, watch the videos together, and then take the knowledge tests on their phones. We've had a lot of people volunteer to just reach out to their individuals, their kids' physicians, and make that direct contact and say, hey, this is important to me. I'd like you to do this. It'll take less than half an hour. Can you promise me you'll do this? And we've gotten a lot of people that way. So this is I think almost everything with Feeding Matters is this very relational, one-to-one and small group discussion of why things are important. And I think that that shows so strongly in this study. So there are incentives if the physician completes the study, they get access to the conference, either the August or February conference, I believe, which is awesome. But what we learned through this study is that it's not really incentives that encourage physicians to do this.
That's going to be one of my questions, Lily, is what are you kind of finding as you're doing this outreach?
It's relationships. The incentive, I think physicians are so overburdened and don't have the time and energy, even when they want to, for large continuing education, for really expanding into different areas of practice, that when we've advertised this as, oh, you get these incredible conference packages, everyone agrees they love it, but it's not becoming the thing that really encourages people to do the study. What really encourages people to do the study is the relationships with families, the relationships with providers that they have known and referred to for a long time. Those kind of interpersonal dynamics have made the difference. So it's been really actually to me quite encouraging to see. I think that, as a researcher, we want to find the perfect incentive that will just make everyone do exactly what we want. But I think it's been really cool to see the community councils take this on, to see individual people take this on. We have a group of kind of ambassadors for this project that have signed up for an ambassador list, which I'm sure is still available for people to sign up on.
And yeah, I included in the notes in this episode.
Yep. With the ambassadors, that can be anyone who wants to help with this project. We've reached out to them directly. Our group has been making direct contact with everyone on that ambassador list and saying, how do you think we should do this? How do you think we should get the message out? How do you think we should really support the recruitment? We have a while. Recruitment is still open until December, so we have a couple more months, which is really awesome. And we are on a good pace, to be honest. But these ambassadors have really, really helped in creatively thinking about how to communicate one-on-one with physicians and make this work for everyone's timelines.
Yeah. How are the ambassadors communicating with you so far?
All through email. These have been like, we have directly emailed them. We have the ambassadors. We have had a lot of people interested in the ambassador list, which has been very encouraging. And then all of us on our committee have an assigned group of ambassadors that we are communicating with to make sure they know someone who really is involved in this work and can talk things out one-on-one communication. We've talked quite a bit of having kind of like open office hours of drop-ins for anyone to come and listen more about this project or suggest ideas for reaching out, which I think is likely going to happen later in the summer, fall, really just scheduling wise.
Yeah.
So keep your eyes out for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it also sounds like part of that is like being open to ideas. And that's what I think is really cool about a lot of the projects that happen under Feeding Matters is like you're saying, it's that one-on-one relationship within the community and the pediatrician, but also as it relates to the ambassadors and to the committee that you're leading, you're a chair that's really open to listening to every committee member and any community member that's coming to you or ambassador that's coming to you with an idea, because it's an iterative process. And so I think you're leading that in a great way that allows that openness to just build a better project. Yeah.
That's what I think. Alana Kate Cruz is the other co-chair of this project, and she and I have developed this really strong understanding that this will work with more people engaged, and this will work when we really learn from everyone else. So while we have academic experience and research experience, we really want this to be relational and grassroots. And that's how it's worked so far. And so we're going to keep going with that method. So anyone listening who wants to send this information to physicians, who wants to put up some flyers, who wants to directly talk to their pediatrician when they go into their next appointment. That's how things are working in this project. And I really believe that we will hit our recruitment numbers and we'll hit a wider range of physicians by using small actual personal relationships instead of only doing certain more traditional classic recruitment ideas.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. Are there any like barriers to progress that you're seeing, or like what worries you or feels hard about this effort? Because I think the pediatrician nut to crack has been challenging. You mentioned it. They have so much going on, and we get that. And we still need to talk about PFD. We still need to talk about feeding, all these other things. So what's your take on that?
I think that what I've experienced is that this recruitment period is actually quite long. And so there's a stamina that we have to continue with this. And when I worry about this project, it's worrying that we are putting a ton of effort in and then we're going to get burnt out and not think of new ideas. Mm-hmm. Or we're going to get discouraged by, ugh, this idea didn't work. Ugh, this hospital said no to a brown bag, which has happened many times. There's a million different reasons why that happens. But I think the longevity and that this recruitment phase actually is quite long means that we need to have a slow and steady burn instead of only doing like big blasts of recruitment at certain phases. So I think that's the open recruitment is a difficulty and benefit of this. And it's been interesting to kind of navigate just the emotional stamina that you have to have.
I think it's a great answer. I mean, because you're right. It's a long recruitment period. It's also a big recruitment goal. So, if you're listening and you've got contacts or you want to be part of being that ambassador or whatever, everybody needs your help.
Yes. And if you have ideas, that's the other thing, too. I mean, I think there are some recruitment methods like posting flyers, posting QR codes. Those kinds of things don't get as many people as the direct one-on-one conversations. But there's no harm in doing that. So printing out our flyers and putting them on local bulletin boards, it might not be the most effective process, but we're still okay with that.
And where can we find those things to help contribute to your steady, I'm going to call it a glow or a shine instead of a burn. How can we
love it? Love it. So all this information is on a landing page on the Feeding Matters website. And I believe it's labeled very clearly the Physician Outreach Project. You'll see the actual recruitment materials. You'll see everything that we've written about it. We have flyers. We have social media information. The list, if you want to be part of our ambassador group, if you click that link, that adds you to the list that we can actually send you additional materials and check in. But yeah, we have all these types of materials and now it's a matter of communicating it.
Yep. Yep. And building on it. And then we'll give it to the public once this project is done too. One of my favorite stories, I'm sure there's so many, but I haven't heard all of them, is a grand rounds where the project was presented or the modules were presented. And the residents answered that they would have never thought to ask some of the questions that were shared during the family experience module. And yep. I felt like it was such a cool story because it was a great example of in real time shifting educational trajectory and shifting acceptance of listening to the family and really thinking about PFD, PFD screening, all the things that we want. So I loved that story and I thought it was so cool.
That is fantastic. It's really exciting, too, once these videos are publicly available after our recruitment phase. These videos are so well done. I cannot wait to use these for many, many years and in different teaching contexts and with families because they are really beautiful. And they really highlight the experiences of families in a really comprehensive and short way.
Yep. Well, huge thank you to you and your co-chair, Alana, because I think you two leading this and all that you're doing to support this large recruitment phase and all that POP is interested in and working with all the community councils. And a thank you and shout out to the community councils who are doing this implementation at the grassroots level. That's what moves the needle. And absolutely. That's why it takes all of us. And like you said, it takes the small groups, it takes the relationships. And that's so much a part of like how we can move systems. And you guys are showing that in real time.
Yeah. Thank you so much. This project is fantastic. And I really think it'll have some long-term change for our physician communities.
Yep. I hope so. I definitely think so. As we close out, anything that we didn't get to ask you that you wanted to share?
No, I would say my plug is if you are interested in getting involved with other Feeding Matters projects, like I said, I tell everyone in my life who's like interested in feeding research and feeding community things, this has just been such a positive experience. And that is not the case with a lot of groups, to be honest. So I highly recommend, keeping your eyes peeled for projects, upcoming events, things to get involved with, because it is really a wonderful group of people that really want to do good in the PFD world.
Yeah, it's the coolest group to be a part of, honestly. Yeah. Like just such amazing people that work together and everybody cares so deeply. Everyone's so passionate. And it's just like fun working with everybody too. So.
It is. It's very enjoyable.
Yeah,
it is really rare to find that kind of dynamic, and I appreciate it so much.
Oh, I love hearing that. I love that. Everybody is a component of culture, and that's how we. And so, you all hold the torch for that in these committee meetings, and how we are as the entire Feeding Matters community. So it takes all of us. Well, very cool. Because yes, we have call for leaders at least once a year. So that'll come out in an email or you'll see that online. The Feeding Alliance, we're going to share more about that on the podcast. And so that's definitely a way to get involved. The Feeding Alliance does have learning lounges that happen every every month. So if you're like trying to like dip your toe into it, that's a way to do it before full-fledged becoming a co-chair of a full-on research project like Lily. So you can, you don't have to jump fully to leadership, but it's a great opportunity to flex some of those leadership skills and community building skills and some of those things. So I co-sign what Lily shared with everybody. Since this project is focused on physician outreach, what would be one takeaway you hope that a pediatrician who maybe gets exposed to this project or exposed to the modules in some capacity, what do you hope that they take away from this in terms of how it can change trajectories in the future?
Yeah, I really want the more qualitative understanding of feeding to be at the forefront. I think that we are really limited when we're only looking at quantities, growth charts, numbers of things. I think that as soon as we start to inquire about the experience, the participation, the stress, the emotions of meals, then we can really start shifting into understanding meals as occupation and what happens when we really have a child and family that are having difficulties during those meals. So I think that's one of my kind of key tidbits for physicians and other providers to think about, is to kind of expand out of that only quantitative view.
That's a great answer. Haley, doesn't that feel like the answer to our other question that we typically ask on the podcast too, of like how to make sure lived experience is a part of research as well? I didn't ask it, Lily, because we were focused on the physician outreach project, but it's an answer to that as well, which is like a lot of this podcast is built on making sure lived experience is at the table in research.
Yep, that's exactly right. Yeah, I think as soon as we think about the, you know, I've been trained in more of the critical studies and more of the critical disability area. And I think that that type of lens in the PFD world is really, really important to remember, that the lived experience can't be undermined. It can't be it can't be siloed into other types of information gathering. It is the information gathering.
Love that. Yeah. Thanks for joining us, Lily. It's been a pleasure, and good luck in the recruitment. Good luck in the rest of this year for you as you go through the rest of your maternity leave, or you're not on maternity leave, but as the rest of your pregnancy and then maternity leave.
Thank you.
I jumped ahead. and yeah, just thanks for everything. We really appreciate it.
I appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.